Your time's expired.
McRae, Kathleen Campbell.
You may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, Melanie Hubbard on behalf of the appellant James C. Spear, Jr. This is a case of statutory interpretation and therefore subject to this court's de novo review. Specifically, it involves Virginia Code Section 16.1, 106.1, which pertains to the withdrawal of appeals from general district courts to the circuit court in civil cases. The specific language at issue in this case is subsection F of 16.1, 106.1, which is, unless the circuit court orders that the case remain in the circuit court, the case shall be remanded to the Juvenile and Domestic Relations District Court for purposes of enforcement and future modification, and shall be subject to all the requirements of 16.1-297.
But it just says shall be remanded. It doesn't say is remanded or ipso facto automatically is remanded or by operation of law becomes remanded. It says shall, right?
It does, Your Honor. It does say shall. However, I believe under the context of this case, the shall is mandatory.
Okay, let's assume it's mandatory. The judge should have done it. If the judge didn't do it, it can be reversed on direct appeal. But the judge didn't do it. Now the only question is, what's the effect of that? And I'm not sure that the briefs are hitting the most obvious point, which is, if it's not a violation of subject matter jurisdiction, it stays, it sticks. Which topples the entire rest of the dominoes for your argument.
In this case, Your Honor, I believe that because the case was sent back from the circuit court to the juvenile court after entry of a final order of divorce, it was transferred to the juvenile court.
No.
Therefore, the juvenile court did have jurisdiction, and it was only because Mr. Spears subsequently appealed a case to the circuit court that it went back to the circuit court at that point in time.
Well, let's assume for the sake of argument that it stayed in the circuit court, and there was no statute telling the circuit court judge, after you deal with this on withdrawal, you shall remand it. Okay, assume that. The district court's jurisdiction is, under my hypothetical, completely intact, right? And the district court would be lacking active jurisdiction, forget subject matter for a second, to do anything while the circuit court had jurisdiction. The only difference between my hypothetical and your case is a statute tells the circuit court judge, in this circumstance, you need to remand it. Well, he didn't. Okay. What's the consequence of that? Does he still have jurisdiction? Yeah. He's got subject matter jurisdiction. Did he violate a statute? Yeah. We hear appeals all day long. Child judges violating statutes. That doesn't mean he lacked subject matter jurisdiction, but I can see by your facial expression you're not agreeing with anything I say.
I understand what Your Honor is saying. I think under the context of this case, yes, the circuit court had subject matter jurisdiction. The circuit court would have had subject matter jurisdiction regardless in light of the fact that the circuit court entered a final order of divorce between these two parties. So throughout the context of this entire case, the circuit court did have subject matter jurisdiction, and the courts had concurrent jurisdiction insofar as the circuit court sent the case, transferred the case to the juvenile court after entry of the final order of divorce. So at all points in time during this case and the procedural history, the courts had concurrent jurisdiction. Circuit court had jurisdiction.
At all points in time, including the last moment, the entry of the order, the order on the withdrawal?
The courts had concurrent jurisdiction with the exception of periods in time when the circuit court had exclusive jurisdiction on appeals.
Okay, there you go. Freeze frame that for just a second. And the law says, and you're right, under the withdrawal situation, you need to remand it. But he didn't remand it. It stayed there.
I understand, Your Honor. I think where I respectfully may disagree with Your Honor is I do believe that it was an automatic remand. And this is similar to a scenario where there's a non-suit, where it automatically goes back down to the juvenile court. The non-suit order doesn't have to say, and the case is remanded down to the juvenile court. By operation of law, at the time of the non-suit, it automatically goes back down to the juvenile court. And that makes sense under this context. And in this scenario, to the extent that there is dispute as to the interpretation of that last portion of 16.106.1. If it is considered to be ambiguous, then we need to look at the legislative intent. And in this case, what we have to guide us with respect to the legislative intent is the Boys Grades Conference Committee subreport, wherein they explain the rationale behind that subsection F. And in that, they say that the juvenile court judges and the DCSE, the Division of Child Support Enforcement, felt strongly that upon the withdrawal of a juvenile court case, that the presumption be that it goes back down to the juvenile court. And so when we look at that, and the language that was proposed by the Boys Grades Committee was substantially the same as what was ultimately adopted and set forth in 16.1106.1 subsection F. And it included that presumption of remand language. And when we consider the statutory construction of the interplay between the juvenile courts and circuit courts, it only makes sense in this scenario.
Can I ask one last question?
Certainly, Your Honor.
Once you get back on track with your main argument. Suppose a trial judge said this, got exactly this case at the final order, you point out the statute, you shall remand it, Judge Kelsey, and I go, well, I'm just not going to do that. And I don't. And I keep jurisdiction in the circuit court in violation of the statute. That can be appealed, right? I'd be clearly reversed. Okay. If I decide to violate the law as a trial judge and keep the case with me, even though the legislature said I should remand it, does that mean I lack subject matter jurisdiction, which otherwise the statute clearly say on this particular subject matter I have plenary jurisdiction?
I believe you still would retain subject matter jurisdiction.
Okay,
however,
well,
that's not to the exclusion of the juvenile court under the
So the juvenile judge and the circuit judge, we could both be hearing the same case simultaneously. The same JNDR case, we can be both hearing it, and who gets to win that battle? Who, the person that rules first or the higher court?
And I think perhaps, Your Honor, that may be an unintended consequence of the way in which this legislation was drafted. However, we need to look at specifically what was drafted. And it was drafted in a manner such that the circuit court judge would have to explicitly say, I want to keep this case for whatever reason. And that may be because despite the withdrawal, the circuit court judge granted some additional relief, such as attorney's fees or something that accrued since the appeal was noted. And in that context, perhaps the circuit court judge would say, I have a particular reason why I want to keep this case in the breast of the circuit court so that I can enforce it, that I can monitor what happens. However, absent those circumstances, absent a circuit court judge saying there's a particular reason why I want to keep this case within the circuit court, it automatically goes back to the juvenile court, and that would be what people generally would consider to occur in light of the fact that in most juvenile court cases, this one happened to be transferred down from the circuit court, but by and large, there are pro se litigants or parties that are not married that have children together or other circumstances that lead them to be solely in the juvenile court jurisdiction. And the juvenile court judge will often stay with those parties. That's how it's set up in Virginia in the cases that I've been involved with. A specific judge stays with those parties with respect to their minor children throughout the duration of the children's minority. And so that particular judge would have an interest in maintaining the case throughout the minority of the children. So parties have a case in juvenile court. It's appealed by one party because there's only a 10-day window in which to appeal to the circuit court. A party gets an adverse outcome in the juvenile court. And so they go, they note an appeal, they go up to the circuit court. However, prior to trial in that circuit court, they decide I'm not going to pursue it for whatever reason. So they decide to withdraw the appeal. And at that point in time, it would go back down automatically to the juvenile court, and that would make sense under those circumstances, because that court, that judge, has heard all the matters pertaining to these children, and that court would have an interest in maintaining the case.
Why would the statute say, if I'm a circuit judge, I shall remand it, if the very act of withdrawal automatically, without the intervention of a judicial order, had the effect of remanding it? Why would the statute say, get your order book out and enter and make sure you remand this case? If everything you said is true, it's already remanded. I don't need to enter any order. It's done. It's done by operation of law, by statute.
And I don't know that the statute necessarily says that the circuit court judge must enter an order remanding the case. You know, these statutes are also looked to by the clerk's office to
case shall be remanded. Who's doing that? The deputy clerk in the clerk's office?
In some respects, yes, Your Honor. It would be a procedural matter where the case would be sent. And as an example, I had another case in a separate county in Northern Virginia, and that was Prince William County. And in that case, there was a trial in juvenile court. And the mother was the party who did not prevail.
So the order of remand can be effectuated by the deputy clerk boxing the stuff up and walking it down the hall to the district court clerk's office? That's what a remand is?
I believe in many contexts, yes, Your Honor. And the Northern Virginia courts that I practiced in with respect to withdrawn appeals, that's essentially what happens, that it goes back down. That automatically upon the withdrawal of the appeal, the clerk's office will send the case back down to the juvenile court, and that creates an additional issue, Your Honor, where in some context, if that's already occurred, and then you go to the circuit court and you ask the circuit court, I would like to have a remand order sending this back down to the juvenile court in light of the fact that the other side has withdrawn their appeal, that circuit court, I think, would be within its rights to say, I don't have a file here. And so the file's already been sent down. I'm not going to.
So the judge, under that reasoning, would not be able to comply with a statute that tells the circuit court judge you shall remand because the deputy clerk has already picked up the files and walked it down there?
I think the judge would have the authority to do so. What I'm saying is the circuit judge may not because the circuit court clerk's office may have already sent the file back down to the juvenile court. And, Your Honor, this puts parties in sort of a quagmire with respect to what happens when a case is withdrawn. The appeal is withdrawn from the circuit court down to the juvenile court. And this creates an issue where it could potentially lead to numerous void orders. Oftentimes, it's pro se litigants in the juvenile court who note the appeal to the circuit court and decide for whatever reason to withdraw their appeal. If at that point they withdraw their appeal, perhaps just checking the box on the notice of appeal and submitting that to the court, and the case file is sent back down, then subsequently one of the parties goes to the juvenile court, files a motion to modify, whether it be child support or custody and visitation matters. They get in trial, they get a new order because, like this case, the juvenile court has enough of a file to render its determination in that case. And then later, perhaps years down the line, an attorney comes in and all they have to ask is, was this case at any point in the juvenile court? Yes. Was there an appeal to the circuit court? The answer to that is yes. And the next question would be, was it withdrawn? And if so, did the withdrawal order also include a remand? And if the answer to that is no, the withdrawal order simply said that the matter was withdrawn, much like this case, but there was no remand language within that withdrawal order, then that attorney could tell the client that order that was subsequently entered in the juvenile court is a void order, doesn't need to be complied with. If you're not happy with the terms of that order, doesn't need to be complied with because it's a void order. And so it creates a lot of issues with respect to the validity of orders that come out of the juvenile court after an appeal is withdrawn from the circuit court.
But wouldn't it also create a problem as to where you go to enforce your order if you're trying to get child support from someone?
Yes, Your Honor, and I do think that, generally speaking, parties in those circumstances would go back to if the order was revived after the withdrawal of the appeal, which is the effect of the withdrawn appeal, the order is revived from the juvenile court because there's no de novo trial on the merits. The natural inclination would be go back to the court that entered that order, which is the juvenile court, and the juvenile court would be the one to either enforce it or modify it thereafter. Your Honor, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time.
All right. 146.
Good morning. May it please the court, Megan McRae on behalf of the appellee, Nawara Amari. This is a case about jurisdiction. And the fact of the matter is that when the juvenile court entered an order back in 2016, it lacked jurisdiction. The reason why it lacked jurisdiction is because Mr. Spear, when he noted his first appeal back in 2013, the juvenile court lost jurisdiction. Upon an appeal, by law, the appeal transfers the entire record up to the circuit court, and it's as though that matter was originally brought there in the beginning. When the order was entered in 2014, withdrawing the appeal, it never remanded the matter back down to the juvenile court, there leaving the jurisdiction within the circuit court. If Mr. Spears wanted remedy from the
court... But here's the problem with the statutory construction point, because the opening sentence says, unless the circuit court orders that the case remain in the circuit court. Did the circuit court order that the case remain in the circuit court?
The circuit court order is silent on that.
Exactly. So that's the problem, is that essentially your interpretation writes out of the statute that opening clause, unless the court orders that the case remain in the circuit court. It didn't do that. It was silent. So then the question is, you know, what do we do with that language?
So then, Your Honor, what we do with that language is that under 16.1-106.1, it's a two-part process, essentially. And what it then also says is that it shall be subject to the requirements of 16.1-297. Now, what's very interesting about that code section is that the mere title of that code section alone says final judgment, copy filed with juvenile court, semicolon, proceeding may be remanded to the juvenile court.
Right.
It does not require.
Under the code expressly tells us we're not to look at titles in construing statutes, which it's very counterintuitive, but that's where we are.
This is the hand in which we're dealt with.
Yeah.
And what we have here, but when you look at the meat of the code section, it specifically states the circuit court shall cause a copy of its judgment to be filed with the juvenile court within 21 days of entry of this order, which shall thereupon become the judgment of the juvenile court. The circuit court never did that. It never did that at all, which goes to the point that if the court wanted this matter to be remanded back down to the juvenile court, it would have filed with the juvenile court within the 21 days its order, but it doesn't do that. So that lends credibility to our argument that the court did not intend to remand this, nor did the parties intend to have this matter be remanded to the juvenile court. The intention was for this matter to stay within the circuit court.
Counsel, do you read 297 as anticipating that the circuit court actually heard evidence and made a judgment to the extent that it goes on to say whereupon such order shall become the judgment of the juvenile court? So doesn't 297 contemplate that the circuit court actually heard evidence, made a decision, and that decision becomes the judgment of the juvenile court, as opposed to 106, where a party just says, circuit court, I don't want you to hear this. I want to go back to juvenile court.
I think that's reading too far into the statute, Your Honor, as to what the language is.
Tell me why you think it is.
Because in nowhere does it state, it doesn't specifically state upon hearing evidence, upon an evidentiary hearing. There's no mention of that whatsoever. All it states upon final judgment, just final judgment, which the order back in 2014 is the final judgment in that particular act.
Upon the rendition of a final judgment, anticipating that the circuit court did something with this case.
Well, it does do something with this case. It stopped this case from being reheard because the appeal was withdrawn at the request of Mr. Spears. So I don't believe that there had to be an evidentiary hearing in order for this portion of the code section to kick in. That's not what is contemplated under 16.1-106.1. Not at all. Because the court order does not specifically state that this matter is remanded and within 21 days a copy of this order shall be transmitted down to the juvenile court, there's no way for this file, this order, to get down to the juvenile court. The court speaks through its order. Counsel's position that the clerk is just going to automatically send it on down to the juvenile court, that's not what the code section states, number one, and number two, that's not what's going to happen in practice.
What am I missing in the debate here? Because I see a very simple syllogism. The statute says, Judge, unless you put in that order that you want to retain jurisdiction, you need to put in the order that it's remanded and then go through the process that the other statute requires. So the statute says that, and the judge doesn't do either one. He doesn't put in the order that he wants to retain jurisdiction. He doesn't put in the order that he wants to remand it. Okay, he messed up. He didn't do what the statute said. But the case is still there.
The case is still in the circuit court. It still has the jurisdiction, and Mr. Spears still has the ability to seek a remedy within the circuit court. And more importantly, nobody appealed that 2014 order. Nobody raised issue with that 2014 order not being remanded back down or language not being there.
The order was drafted, I think. Tell me if...
I apologize, Your Honor. I didn't hear your first part of that.
Who presented this order to the circuit court?
Mr. Spears' attorney presented it.
All right.
So the jurisdiction is with the circuit court. Mr. Spears has remedy within the circuit court. This is where the matter needs to be heard. As I stated from the beginning, the appeal, once he made that appeal in 2000, he filed it in 2013, but once that appeal came into the circuit court, that's where the jurisdiction back was.
So let me ask you a question.
Yes.
So you think that at that point in time, after his attorney has filed his motion to withdraw his appeal, if Mr. Spears wanted another modification of his support, he'd go to the circuit court
yes,
to get it?
That's where
and the circuit court judge would look at the file and say, you withdrew your appeal to me. Why are you here?
The matter wasn't remanded. And that's when we were at the trial court level, when we had the appeal that arose that my client filed from the March 2016 order. Judge Schell held that the court speaks through its orders. There's no language in this order that states that it's remanded, and then further goes on to state that nor was this record ever, this judgment ever transmitted back down to the juvenile court, so this court has jurisdiction over this matter, because it was not remanded back down to the juvenile court. I don't feel that I have anything more to say with respect to the argument, and that from our perspective, that once that appeal was made back in 2013, the jurisdiction remains with the circuit court, and that's where the action should be.
Can I just ask you one last question?
Yes.
I know you'll be happy to sit down, but I'm just trying to figure out, in terms of what's happening in the trenches, are courts adding the language, practically speaking, that you are suggesting should be added, or is this sort of a novel situation, doesn't arise that often, and so... You know, we're just figuring out a somewhat discrete problem.
From my experience, judges typically, when it is to be remanded back to the juvenile court, specifically state in the order.
And there's a stock order, you hit print, and more or less.
I don't necessarily say stock order upstairs in the circuit court, Your Honor, or the juvenile court, that you have a stock order.
Mm-hmm.
But
this seems fairly mechanical in this kind of situation, because you're not really, you know, parsing evidence and credibility and whatever. You're just saying, well, there's this appeal is withdrawn, you know, and anyway.
No form order up in the circuit court. And in my experience, when the court wants the matter to be remanded, it specifically states that it is to be remanded, so that literally the file can physically make its way back to the juvenile court for further proceedings. And typically, I remember, and I hear Judge Dennis Smith's voice in the back of my head stating that, you know, under when we had divorce litigation under 20-79C, that you shall state, parties had agreed that it would be remanded, this matter shall be remanded within 21 days of entry of this order, and putting that language in there if the intent was to be remanded.
As a practical matter, counsel, why would a circuit court retain a case that has been withdrawn on which it has taken no action?
For several reasons, and this case comes out of Fairfax Circuit Court. Fairfax Juvenile Court has an enormous backlog, and getting a petition into the juvenile court from the time that you file to the time that you get your first status hearing, we can wait up to 6 months before getting that status hearing. So as practitioners, we don't want to be waiting 6 months to get adjudication for our clients. Up in the circuit court, we have 15 judges. We have a standard motions day that limits motions to 30 minutes. You have at least 7 judges hearing motions. Things get done much more expeditiously. So you would want, from a timing element for further litigation, to have your matter stay upstairs in the circuit court. I recently had a case where Judge Bruce White was presiding, and it was a matter that it originated out of the juvenile court. It was a child support matter. It came up on appeal. At the conclusion of the matter, the parties had resolved the matter through themselves. The one party wanted to have the case remanded back down. One party wanted to keep the case up in circuit court. The argument that I made was that there's a backlog. We're not going to be able to get into juvenile court. And the circuit court said, I'm going to keep this matter up here because this is a case that's going to require further litigation, and kept it right there.
So is this a tactic that lawyers use in Fairfax County, where the JNDR court makes a ruling? You don't really have a problem with what they said, but you appeal it anyway, and when you get up there, you withdraw your appeal and say, now, Judge, we just want a circuit court judge to handle this because you get the cases a lot quicker than JNDR court does.
That is not a tactic. That is not a tactic. Once the matter is in circuit court, you make the argument to keep the matter up in circuit court, but nobody's going to make that as a tactic to, I'm just going to enter any order in the juvenile court and just do a baseless appeal, because you run the risk of, you entered into an agreed order, and now you want to come upstairs and appeal this just for jurisdiction. That's not going to work.
And why wouldn't it work? Unless the judge remands it back. You're there. If you just withdraw it and the judge doesn't put remand in his order, you're there.
I believe that if you were to go upstairs to the circuit court and they said, everybody's agreed to this and we just did this to get up to the circuit court, you've got a one-way ticket back downstairs to juvenile court. They're not going to entertain those antics at all.
How can they not entertain it?
I don't.
When there's an appeal of right.
You have an appeal of right, but if the parties have entered into an agreed order and are keeping everything the same, and then are saying, but we just want to keep this up here.
It's not we, it's one of the parties doing it.
What I'm saying is that the appeal comes up, the parties come up on the appeal,
right.
And the parties enter into an agreed order.
But no, not on the appeal. No. I'm saying an order is entered by the JNDR court judge. The lawyer on the other side, it doesn't have to be an agreed order, says, you know, I'm going to appeal this. Why? Because, you know, once we get up to circuit court, they handle things a lot quicker. I'm going to withdraw the appeal once we get up there. And we're not going to ask for a remand. So we'll just be in circuit court because they do things quicker if anything else comes up on this case.
If one of those parties disagrees to having the matter stay upstairs in circuit court and states the only reason why opposing counsel wants this to stay up is because of the only reason why they did this is to get a leg up or an advantage, I don't believe that the courts are going to endorse or condone that behavior at all. Thank you.
Rebuttal.
Goodwin, I think that is exactly what this case opens the doors to. It opens the doors to gamesmanship. It opens the doors to savvy attorneys having an advantage on oftentimes pro se litigants who start a case in juvenile court, perhaps are in juvenile court for many years because their children are still minors, and then one withdrawn appeal and the case ends up jurisdictionally perhaps in circuit court as a result of this court of appeals ruling.
Do you think there's gamesmanship going on in your case?
Your Honor, I'm not sure. You know, I don't want to attribute gamesmanship to an attorney. I think that certainly some attorneys are more aware of the jurisdictional aspects of juvenile court.
This order was May 9, 2014, and I take it your client presented that order to former Justice Roush to enter. Am I right?
I believe so, Your Honor.
Right.
I wasn't counsel at that point in time.
Judge, a later circuit court judge colleague of former Justice or Justice Roush interpreted the order and said no. In Fairfax, when we remand it, we remand it. It doesn't just happen when the deputy clerk packs up a couple of boxes. That's the circuit court's interpretation of its own order. And you want us to say, well, that's just not the way it works in Fairfax.
Your Honor, this statute applies to all the jurisdictions, not just Fairfax, and I think that that's part of the problem, that I think a lot of jurisdictions do things differently when it comes to a withdrawn appeal from the juvenile court to circuit court, and there needs to be consistency, and that's part of the reason why a petition for appeal was brought before this court, because there needs to be consistency. We as practitioners and parties need to know, after the withdrawal of an appeal where nothing happens in the circuit court, where is the next motion to be filed? Is it in the circuit court or is it in the juvenile court? And when you look to the statute, and it says, unless the circuit court orders that the case remain in the circuit court, the case shall be remanded to the Juvenile and Domestic Relations District Court. A reasonable interpretation of that is that the circuit court did not state, and the circuit court does speak through its orders, the circuit court did not state, I want to retain this case. And therefore, by operation of law, it's remanded back to the juvenile court. And I think that may be a disagreement as to the interpretation of the statute, but in the event that the plain language does not guide us, and perhaps in this case it doesn't, because there have been various interpretations of the statute, if the plain language does not guide us, then again, we look back to the legislature's intent. And the legislature's intent must guide us under the circumstances. And here we have the Boys Grace Conference Committee subcommittee report. And that is one specific document that led to the enactment of this legislation, where it states specifically there is a presumption of remand. And the interpretation that has been assigned to the statute by the Court of Appeals reverses that presumption. Now we have a presumption where if there's silence, then the presumption is it stays in the circuit court. And that was not the intention. The intention was that if there's silence...
You've answered my question. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And your time has expired. Call the next case.